Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Easterbird.
Steve!
Easterbird.
Yeah, good one.
Are you painting your eggs?
I did that yesterday. They're all set to go.
How about you? How do your huevos look?
I don't know. Pretty good, I guess. I mean,
what'd you paint on your huevos, Jay?
Little Easter bunnies.
That's disgusting. Where are you going to hide your huevos?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
You know what? Modern society. There's a lot of people hiding their huevos now, buddy. Anyway, goodness gracious. Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter.
Enjoy your Easter. What are you getting your Easter stocking, Jay?
Absolutely nothing.
Do you do that? I don't know what you.
It's too early in the morning. I haven't thought about this thoroughly yet.
No,
so there's plenty of time. There's
plenty of time to come up with answers. Sorry, folks. Just ridiculous. Anyway, spring has sprung in the South, Jay. It looks like it's coming. You're saying I've heard tale of.
Yeah.
That things are going to change. What's it looking like?
It's looking a lot better than it was a week ago. It's already 50 degrees out, and it's late morning here. So we got some wind, sun, 50 tomorrow. Got some 60s coming this week, and it's not going to freeze at night. This is going to help a ton. There's a lot of snow to melt, but it's going to start to go fast. Maybe ice out won't be too late after all. It'll probably be a little late, but hey, it's looking a lot better. So,
well, in your smaller lakes, wouldn't they kick off a little faster? I mean,
they will. Yeah. If this weather holds at all after this week of 60s, it's going to do a lot of damage. So we might see, you know, in a couple weeks, small lakes start to open up. It could happen.
There you go. Do your part.
Hope so.
Do your part, folks, and start fires all across. No, do not do that. Do not start fires.
Do your part.
Do your civic duty and start a wildfire to open your lakes today. Do not. Legal disclaimer. Do not do that. It's a joke. Start wildfires. Hi, I'm Jay Essie, and I want you to start a fire. So.
Every little bit helps.
Just local man arrested. Do not start fires, people. No. Period. It's funny. Don't do this because there's crazy people that listen to this show, Jay. I know that for a fact. If anyone's ever looked you in the face, dead in the eyes, right, in a clinical setting and said, hey, you're crazy, don't do what we're saying to do. Do not start wildfires.
Good advice.
Anyway, goodness gracious.
Man, how's fishing been this week? You got some warm weather, right?
It's been really good. A lot of tight windows, a lot of, you know, hot action, short time frame, which is the story of my life.
Yeah, okay.
It was hot, but it didn't last long. The Stephen Paul story. Anyway, you know, when they're moving, they're moving, and it's just been a matter, really, to get them in, get the picture, get them out, and get another one. You know, if you're dilly-dallying, you're probably going to miss that secondary opportunity. So that's been going on. Really good with the Titan Juniors, man. It's been disgusting, and I'm excited. It's not a segue, but it's just the truth. Those suckers are back Tuesday.
Yep, a couple days. Yeah, Tuesday morning they go on sale. The second shipment goes on sale, so it's April 11th.
Yep, they're back, baby. They're back, so get them while you can. There's actually a ton. If you're looking for one of those, they'll be back. And Livingston got us covered. I don't think we'll have the same worries as the last batch where it's just like, oh, we're out. No, we got a ton, boys. So we're going to be set up on that. I'll tell you, just boring old me, just the straight Midnight Man or the hot SP Tiger's been really good to me as of late.
Okay.
You know, on dark days, that's my jam, so. Those have been
dark
good.
Day, dark color. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is this,
the old adage,
Well, I've got a bunch of questions this week about best application. And, you know, I really think, especially from prototyping and everything and knowing that they're going to excel up north in those shallow zones, like right at season opener. Mm-hmm. Some of the brighter stuff's going to be good, especially for your when you got some chop on the water and everything. Those are going to be killer. That little grape flamethrower, come on, forget about it. If you got any steam in the water, it's going to be good. So, yeah, they're like books. Check them out. They'll be back Tuesday, Tuesday morning. Folks, set an alarm for 3:15 a.m. Minocqua's beast.
So. Yeah, they should go on sale 8 or 9 o'clock our time, Central Time. So. Yeah, and if you want an email notification, just get on the website and click the colors that you want, and that'll let you know exactly when they go on sale.
Very cool. So the other thing that showed up, finally got these. Actually, Jim the Tube Screamer Stewart, he fixed one of these, like the nut on one of these Trinx power handles for me one time. We were laughing about it because we just sort of glued it. But I guess it's, I'm going to butcher it. Is it Gomexus, the power hand?
Yeah, I put those on Friday, I think, just a few days ago.
I've had
I think
one
it's Gomexus, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you've run those?
Yeah, that's the one that's been on
that's
my...
That's the one you... Oh, gotcha.
That's been on my power, or on one of my Trinx low gear, not low gear, whatever it is, like the standard gear ratio Trinx.
That's the one, okay.
Yeah, it's been on there for eons. Those are really good power handles. The Trinx has that gigantic, like, doorknob handle, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I like
right.
that for throwing rubber. You got a little more grip, you know? It can't get away from you. But if I'm twitching or straight applications, I'm not a big fan of that handle, so I went with one of these Gomexus power handles, and man, at least the one I have, you like flick that handle, it spins forever, Jay. It's like it's you know, like some super ball bearing crazy stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
it's a good handle, like I said, because a lot of people,
not the handle but the knob, you're talking about the knob,
your knob, Jay.
Mm-hmm. I knew you'd say that.
What knob?
Nothing. Hello.
Great word. Anyway, you know, that's a good handle. I, like I said, for twitching applications, running Titans, running Bucktails, running your shallow Raiders and your Invaders and your Evaders and Taters, really good handle for your Tranks. Like I said, I'm not knocking the big handle. That's my ripping rubber. Jay, when I'm in my power stance, guess what I want? I want a big knob in my hand.
There you go.
Anyway, so we also got, God, I'm sorry. It's Easter, folks. Got the Musky Shop camo patch hat that came in. Jay likes the camo. Me and him have matching camo shorts, folks. We didn't plan it, but it's called Old Dudes That Bought Shorts in the 90s. The other thing that showed up that was pretty cool, Amma Bama.
Yeah, we got some. We got the last of them, actually. Some of them were made 2015, 2017, because he signs every one of them on the bottom, you know, and with the year that it was made.
In the fires of Mount Doom.
In West Virginia.
West, by God. Now, people will say, why is it called an Amabama? Because there's a town called Amma, by God.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Looney made an Amabama. Amabama!
Is that how it's pronounced down there?
Oh, yeah, you don't say Amabama. Amabama!
Oh, gotcha.
As we should have called Ricky Bobo. He's the only one that can say it correctly. No. I'm a Bama. No,
that's
great.
True.
You said you got the last of him. Does that mean he's no longer producing?
Yeah, Tom talked to him at length, and he's like, Do you have any? And he's like, I'll scrape something together and see what I got left, but I'm not going to make baits anymore. So he's an elderly gentleman, he's been doing it since 72. He's been making baits, 71 or something like that. I mean, a long time.
One thing that a lot of people
don't... So this is it.
People don't know, and I don't know if this still holds true, but there's some ties there to Bill Crane. You know, you look at sort of the old school. There's all these new bourgeoisie West Virginia musky angler, son. I'm old school.
Well, yeah, I remember this, you know, years ago on the podcast,
Bill Crane,
you were talking
Bill
about Looney. Your dad used to hang with those guys. Yeah,
Bill Crane, Bill Looney, Jack Cobb, and that was about it. There's about seven people there that knew what a muskie was, and four of them built baits.
That's funny.
You couldn't get them. You know, there were no baits. It was like there was no muskie store or now you can go up to the Dick's, Jay.
Go
up to Dick's, get your bait. So
in Walmart.
Walmart. I don't think Walmart. I've not seen a muskie bait in a Walmart in West Virginia yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, because some of the Walmarts will carry like the worst muskie baits on planet Earth. Have you noticed that?
Right.
Like,
right.
Whoever's buying those from Walmart's like, can we get the stuff that's awful? And it'll be like, it's funny. Every YouTuber, they want to do clickbait, right, Jay?
Yeah.
They're like, let's do a clickbait video where we make whatever. You know, we turn a can of Vienna sausage into water, right? They should just do like, can you catch a muskie on a bait you bought from a Walmart straight out of the package? Probably not. So there's like companies you've never heard of. It'll be like Kwanzaa Fishing Double Eights. It's like, what?
Let's buy some stuff that everybody else rejected and see how it goes.
No, it's actually just Chinesium packaged by South Bend. But anyway, I'll get off the Walmart tip. But
please,
you know,
do.
A lot of the West Virginia bait makers, that was just purpose driven. You know, where there was nothing else. And I'll say this. I mean, in my opinion, West Virginia is the home of the glide bait. You look at it, Cobb baits, Amabamas, some of the newer guys there doing stuff. I'd say the vast majority of innovation on glide baits and that presentation as a staple is just, you know, really a lot of that's been developed there. You know, it could be argued who did it first, but the West, by God, definitely is in the conversation. So the Cobb baits are cool. Oh, the Cobbs and their Amabamas.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. You've got the Lucky 7. Is that balsa?
Yeah. I don't think it's balsa wood. I think it's a hardwood. They're very heavy. I did a buoyancy test in the tank on that thing, and I mean, it doesn't have a slow rise, but it doesn't. It's not extremely buoyant like a balsa crane bait would be. You know what I mean? It's a heavy bait. I don't have a listing up anymore here. I think it's, you know, like a 2 ounce 7 inch twitch bait, so fairly heavy.
You never know. Being from West Virginia, it might be made of masonite. Oh, I got a good deal on some old countertops. Gonna make a bait.
Oh, I think doesn't he make baits out of basswood?
Probably. Isn't that bass. I'm teasing. It's not made out of counter. I'm just making fun of West Virginia, which you would. Oh, that's a good piece of OSB board. Let's make a bait.
So, gotcha. Anyway. Sure.
But very cool. West Virginia in the house. Mountain Mama. Other than that, Jay, any comings and goings at the Muskie Shop? Oh, hold on. Speaking of goings.
Is
the Blades out again? I just saw that.
Yep. Ran out a week ago. Yeah, he's making more. So.
Is he? You call Hack and Smith? Okay. Yeah.
Jim talked to him, the Tube Screamer Stewart.
Talked to Josh, the South American Snowman Hack and Smith. Got some more blades in the works there, hopefully, folks. Those are bad. I'm just telling you. Me and old Joshy Poo worked on those for quite some time, and they're bad. So when they come back, get your hands on them. Man, other than that, I wanted to talk about something. You know, sometimes we get so many questions, or I'm getting emails, I'm getting this, I'm getting that about similar things, right? Similar things. And you go, okay, there's obviously enough people that are wanting to sort of figure some stuff out. And it seems like for the last few weeks has been spinner baits, right?
Sure.
And you look at them. And for anybody that has fished before let's say you started bass fishing, you've thrown spinner baits. A lot of times these baits are overshadowed in musky fishing by inline spinners, right? And I've talked to a lot of anglers over the years where they think spinnerbaits are for wives, girlfriends, and people that can't keep a bucktail going. And I think that's a really wrong misconception when it comes to these lures as far as an applicational standpoint. Because for me, spinnerbaits become far, or spinnerbaits not become, spinnerbaits are far more versatile presentations than inline bucktails. What are you doing back there, Jay? You wrapping a turkey in foil?
Yep, already done. Oh, no, fantastic. It's a turkey. It's an Easter ham.
Easter ham. I all by myself with a ham. Anyway, I mean,
The way I look at spinnerbaits, Steve, is that in the springtime you want a slower presentation, something right. That's in the strike zone longer. And for the most part, all spinnerbaits are moving forward at a slower pace during a normal retrieve than an inline would, than your normal inline.
Well, and running deeper. I mean, and that's the whole crux of the matter, really, is if you look, I've got spinnerbaits pulled up here. So we got rough tackle, your figure eights, your ace baits. What else we got? Grim Reapers. You know, if you look at the composition of these baits, the vast majority of your spinner baits on the market are willow leaves. We've talked about blades before. Willow leaves have a far lower amount of rise, right? Where a Colorado is going to keep that thing higher in the water column, and Indiana and so on and so forth due to surface area. So I look at, conceptually for me, spinner baits are probably, hands down. If I don't know what to do, I throw a spinnerbait, right? If I'm absolutely, positively out of ideas, I'm just looking to get a follow, I'm just looking to get the party started, I like spinnerbaits because I can apply them in so many methodologies just right out of the box, right? So my favorite spinnerbaits, hands down, no questions asked, the figure eight stuff, right? Those are my go-to. We did a video on it last year. I love them. So the figure eight Boss Mini Boss. Mm-hmm. I can take a Boss, the big one. I can throw it out and straight retrieve it over shallow stuff, right? I can yo-yo it back, which a lot of people never do with spinnerbaits, you know, or I can throw it and I can contour structure like super slow and get it down and dirty, or contour cover where I can get the skirt and the body running just above weeds or just above timber, and sort of being more probative with that bait than you can be with other baits if you don't know what's going on. I would say, just from a mental standpoint for me, it's a rarity that muskies won't positively respond to a skirt bait, right?
A skirt bait.
And what I mean by that, and I'm so, we have like our minnow baits, and it obviously looks like a minnow. Or it looks like a fish, right? And then you have your bulldogs that look like what, right? Looks like a sucker. Does it look like a salamander? You know, we back in West Virginia, we got hellbenders, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a freaking Komodo lizard. If you've never seen a hellbender, look it up. They're disgusting. So, you know, it's just, and then you got spring lizards and all this stuff. So you can make an argument about what do these presentations look like. When I say like a skirt bait, meaning a giant killer to double tens to a spinner bait, for some reason, that look, that profile always seems to get a response regardless of seasonality. A lot of reasons people are not effective with these baits year round is because they lack the speed and depth control, right? And I'm not saying the baits do, I'm saying the anglers. They throw them out, they reel them in, and that's it. But I think the most operative thing when it comes to a spinnerbait is its ability to contour, you know, contour cover, contour structure, and run at different depths. I mean, another thing that comes to mind quickly is all the teaching of Bucher over the years where he's talking about fishing some of the heaviest slop, right? So it's accessibility to super dense cover as well. So I really can't think of an application in musky fishing where they can't be effective, right?
Sure.
So in another, I'm good, tangentially, if you will, making up words here. Let's say that you were dialed in on a bulldog bite. We're just talking about those things. Then we're going to rip paws. Theoretically, you could catch those fish on a heavyweighted spinnerbait doing the same thing, right? Stop. So the versatility is there. It's just how we approach it and what we do with it. Now, you go, why do you say like the figure eight baits? The thing I like about the figure eight baits is that little clip on the blade, right? So the Boss and the Mini Boss come with a clip on the blade. What do you call that, Jay? It's like a freaking fast change, or you know what I'm talking about?
It's a snap.
Snap. Okay. Sorry. It's early. I'm stupid. So you got your snap on there, and you can change the blades. So
sure.
When I'm doing a blade change, I'm looking at spinner baits. Let me see something here. You got like this. I don't want to compare apples to oranges or anything, but let's just stick with this figure eight. So I've got a Boss, and I have the Willow, and I'm using that to contour weeds, cover, and structure. But I find that I need to run higher in the water column. I can quickly put on a Colorado, and it changes the entire running dynamic of that bait.
It does.
I mean, entirely. An entirely different bait, right? And Indiana, somewhat different, right? But the jump from Colorado to Indy, the jump from Colorado to a willow leaf blade couldn't be further apart, right? So that really allows some for versatility there where I can dial in on that presentation style. The other thing I would say is this, and just riffing on it, would be the increase of blade size within the same blade family, right?
Sure.
So a small willow blade obviously has quote unquote less thump, but is going to have less rise, where you can use like a oversized willow blade to get that thing to have a little bit more hang at depth so you can work it a smidge slower, right? Don't think of blade size on these willow or on these spinnerbaits as a device to create more thump. Think of the blade in some capacity as a device to create lift, right? So you can dial in on that via thought process. The reason I'm picking on the figure eight is I can quickly change those blades out. If I got a handful in my pocket or whatever laying on the boat, I can quickly change those blades out throughout the course of the day, or even the course of a spot or area, I should say. I don't like the word spot, but through an area where I go, okay, I'm fishing the shallower edge. Now I need to get to the deeper edge. Bam, 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 right? That would be something that I'm thinking about. Jay, I know you throw a lot of spinner baits on the river, which I love because you're not worried about blade collapse, but what are you doing with like muskies, pike on the rivers and stuff with these things?
What am I doing with them? I'm working edges and I'm working timber so effectively and so weedlessly.
Mm-hmm. Weedless timber, and he says.
And slower. And slower presentation. It's in the strike zone longer. It's not burning through, you know. It's just like fishing there. They need a little bit of time to commit to something sometimes. So I think that's that. Again, it's a slower presentation. It's not burning a bucktail over something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's obviously the ticket, you know. Usually, and you know, when you got that low hanging clouds and storm front approaching or something, yeah, sure, try fishing faster. You know, you might contact more fish and all that, but you know, day in, day out, that's what you're going to want to do is fish to cover slower.
Something that also was in multiple emails we've got over the last few months was about hooking percentage on spinnerbaits.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that a lot of anglers go, I mean, it's the same parts and pieces, right? So if you took a Meps Giant Killer and a Willow Leaf spinnerbait, you could deconstruct them and you have the same components laying there in some capacity. Right? Except for a treble hook. And so people think a treble hook is going to be a far higher hooking percentage. I really don't miss on spinner baits. I don't miss a lot of fish just by the very nature of how they hit them. Right?
And you think you would. You think you would because there's less hook surface area or what have you.
Less points.
And that huge arm sticking up above it. Oh, they're going to hit the blades. It's just like for some reason they hit the body. And I tend to agree that the hooking percentage is good. And I think you land. The landing percentage is higher too.
Well, that's why I said quote unquote skirt baits. Like they target that skirt. They target the skirt. Skate, skate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Skate, skirt. They target the skirt. So that profile, whatever that is, visually to a muskie works. But yeah. I don't tend to really. I would say the vast majority of muskies that hit any of these spinnerbaits, like the Boss or Mini Boss for me, it's in the corner of the mouth too. And I don't know if it's. Maybe it's technique and I've not identified it, or maybe it's just the nature of that bait where it slips through so easily and you're going to get hook penetration. I don't personally feel that I've lost or missed a muskie due to the lack of a treble, right? And I know that weirds some people out. That's what we're covering is like, is it a higher hooking percentage with the bucktails? And I think a lot of reasons that people gravitate, quote unquote, towards a bucktail, it's a lot of these have two fives or two sevens on them. There's tons of gap and tons of points, right?
Yeah.
But the application, you might quote unquote lose less muskies because you get two giant trebles, but you're missing muskies that you're not accessing by not fishing spinnerbaits. Therein it lies the point of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of you aren't throwing spinnerbaits because you're afraid of hooking percentage. Well, if you're not near them, you can't hook them anyway. So that would be my take there. Other points, and there's a litany of questions about trailers, right? And being from West Virginia, I've seen plenty of trailers, Jay. Single and double wide.
No doubt.
But I heard tale of a rare triple wide one time. Never seen it with my own eyes, though, boys. But the trailers on these baits, doesn't matter. You know, is it important? I don't know.
Oh, you mean to run a trailer or not?
Right.
Or the size.
You know, there's like I said, it's an amalgam of emails here. Some people are asking, does the type of trailer matter? Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other people going, if I've lost my trailer, get out of here, cat. Other people have asked if I've lost my trailer, do I have to replace it? Personally, the way I run my stuff, I like a trailer on the back hook, right? I'm not worried about it being under the skirt. Maybe you can put it on there to give it some fluff if it matters to you. But I like a trailer on the back hook. It's a little bit more visually appealing, I think, when they're behind it. The reason being is 99% of your spinner baits are going to be rubber core skirts, not flashaboo, right? Rubber core takes far higher speeds to get motion in the skirt. So my propensity to always have a trailer is not quote unquote the trailer. It is systemic of the fact that the rubber core is undulating far less than flashaboo at low speeds. Right? So I think that's why it's so important to have a trailer on your spinnerbait. Unless, you know, if you're fishing at high, let's say we're dialed down a pattern where we're fishing, you know, ace baits or whatever at high speed, burning them, you know, over shallow weeds and you're getting lit up. It probably won't matter at that point. I just like that little bit of undulation in the back of the bait because that rubber core skirt just doesn't have the same life to it. At lower speed applications. Jay, are there any flashaboo skirts? Yeah, I know CS makes them. Violent Strike, a few of these people make some of those. So Booker, obviously, you got tensil skirts. But, you know, if you have a tensil skirt, probably not as important. But if you're just going with a tried and true rubber core, you know, that might be the smart move. If I'm fishing any that are hair as well, there's still some, Jay, not many though, right? I'm trying to think. Hershes? I know Hershes ties hair. Wendell's. There's some old school Wendell's. What am I thinking here of hair? Hairy bucktail.
Bucktail spinnerbaits, yeah. Well, Ghost Tail's not in business anymore, but yeah, Wendell's, Slither. I think some of the Slither stuff is here. Let me bring up the website. That's about it. No, like you said, predominantly it is going to be either silicone or rubber skirted stuff or a combination of both.
Yeah, and when I say rubber,
that's the overall popular.
Yeah, the clarification should be made. When I'm saying rubber core, I'm meaning all. You know, it's not a different. I'm not
the rubber plastic.
Yeah,
genre.
It's not like silicone versus. I did. You know, didn't clarify.
You're lumping them together. Yep.
Yeah, lumping together. It's early. I'm me dumb.
Yeah. Well, back to that trailer thing. You know, you're talking about the trailer or not the trailer. It's just like when you work in the fishing business for a long time. A common thing you hear all the time is,
Jay, leave me alone. Get away from me.
Right? I've heard that before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was what you'd hear.
Yep. Yeah. That's what they say.
What else have you heard, though?
They say, oh, they're short striking. I got to run a trailer. You know, after you determine, well, it's just like, well, that's why you're running a spinnerbait in the first place, is because that's the kind of bite that's hot on going right there. So.
Yeah, don't.
That's my point being. So, yeah, if you can run a trailer, if you have an appropriate size, you can slip over there with those little rubber doodads. Run it.
The doodad. Hey, speaking of rubber.
It's a technical term.
Rubber doodads. Little trick here. Okay, so whatever those rubber doodads are, I hate them.
Who doesn't?
Right? And here's the deal. If you have a smaller hook, because you cannot change the main body hook on a spinnerbait. You just can't. That's what's on there, and whatever the manufacturer felt was best, you're stuck with it. Little trick I'll give you. I will use far larger rear hooks on a spinnerbait, and I will use small zip ties. And so you can get really small zip ties that you can interchange on there far easier than whatever those doodads are.
Yeah, there you go.
A zip tie is, once you get, obviously you don't have to even push it past the shank of the first hook. You just put whatever hook you want on there, clinch it down, cinch it down. It cannot go past the barb on that main hook, and you can put whatever hook you want on the back.
Bingo.
I have actually put, if you wanted to argue the fact, trailer, obviously we're not going to do this in heavy cover, but you know, you could theoretically put a treble hook on the back of a spinnerbait using that methodology. And I'm not using big old honking zip ties. I'm using something that, like, the size of the zip tie will not allow the eye of the hook to come off this thing. But that's what I do on my boat. It's far easier than messing with those little rubber things. And I've seen over the years, whether it be the medical tubing or whether it be the little rubber doodads, as Jay appropriately called them,
technical term.
Right. You have the same spinnerbait for a while, they can start wear and tear.
Yeah. Right?
And you're going, oh, I'm out of the ball game, or you're worried about it. Zip.
No, that's a quick fix, because I don't trust the doodads.
Me no trust doodad. Mm-mm. Can I get that on a t-shirt, Jay? Me no trust doodad.
Yeah.
Folks, sign up today. Get on the mailing list for Jay's doodads. Available in 73 custom colors. But don't miss out. Jay will have Jay's Musky Doodads available in custom show colors this winter.
I'll work on that.
What? You want
to? It'd be a good t-shirt.
Easter, Jay's Easter Pink Musky Doodad.
No, why stop there? We can do a video on it too.
Jay, have you ever shown anyone your doodad in public? Anyway, that would be some spinnerbait thoughts. I'm sorry. It's Easter. It's early. Show me your doodad. Yeah. All right, Jay, a little Easter Q&A. Bob, when trolling, do you prioritize trolling in a certain direction, i.e. with the waves or against the waves, for any particular reason? Is it based on boat control or speed control? Do you find that muskies orientate themselves into the current awaiting bait fish? Absolutely. You have to play, like, if we have winds or waves running parallel to where we're trolling. So let's say we're trolling a shoreline, right?
Sure.
And the wind is at your back. It's going to highly augment your trolling speed, right? It's going to push you forward quite faster. And that level of propulsion is going to change how things are running with the baits a little bit, right? And what will happen is it'll change your running depth. It'll change a lot of things. I prefer if I'm facing or if I'm up against like a windy scenario and I need to troll or I'm trolling, I like to go nose into it. I feel like I have a little bit more control. Now, if we're dealing with like really big chop, you need to keep an eye on your speed. You know, you might have to throttle up, throttle down, but you know, if it's 1 foot, 2 foot stuff, you ought to be pretty consistent. I don't really think that it's going to make a hill of beans going into it. Like I said, whether it's to your back, it'll skew things a little bit. You know, if you're crosswind or something of that nature, that's a whole other ballgame because now we have a boat control issue. You know, say imagining, you know, you're paralleling an edge and it's hitting you on your port side, you know, you're going to be having to compensate quite a bit. So you're going to have to read each scenario as it comes, but I like to face into the wind. I try to not fish or try not to throw a crosswind if I can, or I might augment my trolling pass so that I'm zigging and zagging even more to sort of fight a crosswind. And of course, I mean, you talk about, do muskies orientate themselves in current awaiting bait fish or whatever's created by wind? Absolutely. I mean, if it is a wind that's sustained long enough to if it changes bait fish patterning, you know, 1 day, probably not going to happen. 2 days, sustained winds, it's going to change things. Muskies are going to stage in a place that's advantageous. And if bait fish are getting pushed into, say, a point, or they're getting pushed into like one cove, or they're getting pushed up against one structural element. Oh yeah. Right.
I think one thing he's getting at too is it's like if there's has been a sustained wind, say out of the north, do you feel that the muskies are actually pointed in a direction as opposed to just being staged?
Not with the wind.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the so yes and no. So if the wind, let's say, regardless of direction, let's say we have a sustained wind in whatever direction. How that wind is interacting with structure is going to dictate their staging location, right? However, that's also influenced by how heavily it's impacting bait fish. Now, if bait fish are feeling moderate influence and they're being moved. Now they're not, the whole food chain is moving across the lake towards one direction. If it's like hellacious and it's just blowing 4 footers and, you know, I'm thinking like a big Minnesota or Canadian open water area and it's just rocking and rolling. I mean, things are going to be tightly congregated because they have little to no choice. They're either going to be bottom tight or structurally tight. So in my brain, I'm thinking about the dichotomy of structural tightness versus open water. Because when I think about wind and moving bait fish, in my head, it becomes slightly an open water scenario when it's a moderate influence. When it's highly influenced, it's highly tight, right? Extremely tight, because at that point, if it's rocking and rolling, it's affecting the entirety of the littoral zone or 12 to 0 feet and things are choppy and things are moving and there's motion. You know, they don't want to fight that. Muskies don't want to fight head nose into current or head nose into a blow unless it's like a prime feeding window. So you get, there has to be a little bit of thought process there of like, how heavy is the influence of the wind, right? To what degree will this impact forage and what degree will it affect staging? So if it's moderate, staging might be moderately open water, where if it's extremely heavy wind, extremely heavy chop, things will tighten up structurally because they have little to no other option to effectively feed. That would be my thought. I don't know. Direction. Whatever. Ryan, what are your go-to crankbaits fishing around rocks? I've been breaking off a ton of lips on some of the baits that I'm using. I'll leave those out. Am I overworking these? Am I hitting the rocks too hard? Is there a way to avoid this, or is it just part of the game? I think I'm not knocking baits, right? I'll say this. I will not fish a crane bait around heavy
in
rocks.
That situation. Yeah, me either.
I'm not big on inserted lip crankbaits in that scenario. So I want a one piece mold. So like a crane, slammer's an inserted lip. I love slammers. I'm not going to target like reefs and aggressive rock fishing with a slammer or a crane. Right now, a bait like a shallow raider, where it is a one piece mold where the lip and the body are one piece, that's going to be a little bit easier. However, you can still break those lips regardless, right? No worry. But I mean, there's not a lot of like shallow little crank options. Jay, one that I've used, and it's kind of, people are gonna like, were you kidding me? If I'm fishing reefs or I'm fishing like dedicated to making contact, float back, making contact, tick and click, hardcore, is the Pikey Minnow. There's the Creek Chub.
Okay.
We have those, right?
No.
We don't.
They don't make them anymore.
Really?
I don't think so.
I'll be damned. I've got to tell you.
No, metal lip stuff. Metal lip stuff. You know, in my mind,
what other metal lips are there?
Cisco Kids. You got Snitty Baits. You got Big Fork.
The thing I don't like about the Cisco Kid, though, is like it comes out of tune. Like if you're, I'm talking aggressive, like we're ripping across our body. Wham! Wham!
Because they bend. They're made to be adjusted. Sure. You know, it's a drawback. I hear you.
Chubs or whatever they were. Man, I'll find one. I thought for sure there was something like that at the shop. But what Smitty stuff do we have? I'm trying to think of metal lipped reef digger. And that lip's a little bit more tempered than like a Cisco Kid. Cisco Kid, you can bend a little easier. What else is the Smitty? Smitty Dick.
Yeah, he's got some metal lip stuff. Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. The Smitty, was it Dick Greer's tackle? That would be
Dick Greer's stuff. Yeah, the Esox Minnows. Yep.
That would be something I would consider. You know, you're going to, it's just like trolling a headlock, right? There's no difference. I've talked about it before. If you're going to troll Jake's and Grandma's and make hard impact with reefs and hard impact with whether it be wing walls or whatever kind of structure or kind of elements you're fishing, you're going to detonate baits. It's just par for the course. So it's not like there's a good bait or a bad bait or anything that we go, you know, it's just a matter of application and a matter of slightly longer lifespan, if you will. I'm not seeing too much anything. Man, talk about old school. I guess they haven't been made since 1940 or something. Not really.
No, those three companies, ones I can think of. Yeah, everything's, you know, gone to the plastic Lexan kind of.
Okay, here it is. Exactly the same bait with a soft tail is the Smitty short tracer tail crankbait.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. So you got an inset metal lip, you got a jointed bait, and you got a soft tail. Beat the crap out of her, right? That's the same lip angle. That's what they sort of emulated there.
It's true.
Yeah, and so if you're breaking lips, you're knocking them loose, that's going to be a pretty dang solid option for you. Sometimes you are. I mean, a lot of times we're fishing like a rocky spot in a certain area, right? Or we're a rocky section, but somebody's water just demand that you're constantly making contact, bang, 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 you know, throughout the course of the day. So metal lip's going to be on my list there. The other thing you can do, let's say you are fishing a slammer or you're fishing something with an inset lip where the lip and the body are two different pieces and they're put together in an assembly, you can reinforce that with some extra super glue, right? It's not that it needs it, but that's an extra sort of level of securing a bait, or if they become dislodged because you're overfishing. Something I put as a giant caveat here, folks, there's not a singular bait that is going to survive this the entire time. There's not a bait that's like, okay, this is like going to last all year, or I'm going to have the same crankbait for 5 years. It's not a judgment between good, bad, or ugly. It is a
It's a maximum abuse kind of situation.
Yeah, period. And it's not, you know, it's not to say this is good or that's bad. You just need to know going into it.
Yeah, I agree.
Just firm things up, sure things up to the best of your ability. You know, this is going to sound ridiculous, and I've done it, is epoxy quarters to the lips of plastic lips. Right? And so if you literally, I know you're like, oh, come on. It slows them down a little bit. And you're probably not supposed to do epoxy quarters. It's probably like defacing tinder. Let's just say a little piece of aluminum, whatever. If you just add a little reinforcement to that lip that you're just going to bang into it, it'll keep the lip from cracking a little bit. So that's just some hillbilly stuff I've done in the past. Not something I do very often now, but, you know, I'm sick of breaking lips or just knocking them out. Add a reinforcement. Yeah, there's not a great, and that's the thing, Jay, that there's not a great, like, super reinforced shallow twitch bait. Now that we say it and we're going through it, like, if somebody is going to just beat on concrete and rock and hard rip rap, I don't think there's one where I go, that's the one.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, and some of the one-piece plastic stuff is ABS plastic, too, which is, you know.
Still, though, they chip and break. And
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing it.
Right, you know, right. So I agree.
To answer a very long-winded answer, your question is you're not doing anything wrong. It's par for the course. We just got to sort of get in. The same thing could be said, too, like the old-school dive and rise baits, like your bobbies and stuff. People used to billy goat the heck out of the lips, is what we always called it. You're just beating them off reefs.
Yeah.
You know, and then miraculously the nose screw would come out. Well, no joke, you just basically took off, you know, half an inch of material there and weakened the entire bait.
Yeah.
Which, just in general, if we're fishing in an aggressive manner with anything, whether it be crankbaits or whatever, if we're fishing in an aggressive manner, it does hold true to give things a look, like periodically, because a lot of times you're like dialed in and you're really wanting to get a fish and it becomes an afterthought. Just every now and again, take your bait and check things out just to make sure you're avoiding heartbreak, because you can get in that scenario. And I've done it taking mid-depth running crankbaits. I've done this straight out, and I'll admit it. Working it, hitting, contact, right? I go to set the hook on a fish. Nobody's home, and I come back, and the hook retainer's gone, right? It's not the bait's fault. It's not the manufacturer's fault. I've used their product well beyond what its intended use is, and by fishing that aggressively for hours or days, of course I've cracked a seam on the bait, and of course when a muskie hit it or a pike hit it, that the hook retainer came out, because not every bait's lined through. So that's something to pay attention to. Just a thought. Just a thought. Oh, this guy's name is Wisconsin Muskie Master. Jay, did you write into the podcast? Did you do that?
No, it's not me.
It says Jay. Now, what are your thoughts on decaying weeds? I've always heard that they should be avoided because they're not they should always be avoided because they're not producing oxygen, you know, from other anglers. Well, muskies use dead or decaying weeds.
It's still cover.
Right. So here's my thought. Just been my rule of thumb on this. In certain bodies of water that are probably not highly oxygenated, and not too many of us are taking out a DO meter for dissolved oxygen on the boat. I mean, it might be a bad thing because, you know, those weeds are not producing. I think in moving water, current absolutely doesn't matter. Right? There's far higher levels of dissolved oxygen. I think the old adage, and I don't have the science of it, you know, to a pinpoint here, but that adage about the dying weeds comes from their rot and decay and oxygen depletion and all this stuff. I don't think it matters. Like Jay said, it's cover. So I don't think a muskie, let's say that the weeds are depleting dissolved oxygen in their area around, in and around where they're decaying. I think a muskie's going to go in there and bury his head in them. Right, it's like, hold on, let me put my head in this plastic bag and suffocate. But they could very well be staged above or around. it's not something I'm overthinking tremendously. Now, the other thing I would say is this, is rotting and decaying weeds, that's usually happening, you know, later in the season. So you don't run into it too much because usually the staging preferences have changed, right? So maybe this guy's referring to earlier in the spring. I don't think it's going to matter. If seasonality and weather patterns say that muskie's going to be on shallow cover, I'm going to fish them regardless. Do you have any thoughts on that? That's not something I think about too terribly often, but it's worth the note, Jay. What are your thoughts?
Let's say it's early season, you know, season just opened wherever, ice out, or it's just warm enough to start, you know, seeing some active fish. It's just like some bodies of water, some lakes still have, you know, last year's weeds in them. And it's just like I said earlier, it's still cover. So I wouldn't overlook it. I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, yeah, it's going to attract something and, you know.
Right. And don't overthink it because it's like.
Don't overthink it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to, while you're pontificating there, I was trying to figure out how do you make that read. Are there bait fish there?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Right.
It's all that really matters in the spring, right?
Are there bait fish there? Covers cover. Will muskie set on stage by? Yeah, I don't think it's like. I've heard people before, and this is years back, talking about, you know, how awful the decay was. And, you know, you might. It's like the muskies are being hit with mustard gas. Not really. Like, oh, I can't breathe. Come on. If there's bait fish staged, fish it. That would be my thought there. Let's do one more, G. Happy Easter. How many peeps have you eaten today? Larry, I have a neurological disorder, but still love musky fishing. That's awesome. Good for you. Your podcast has motivated me to seek new ways to approach the sport. I'm eternally grateful for all the info and laughs as you guys have got me through some pretty tough days. That's awesome. Thank you.
Oh, nice.
As someone with a disability that limits my grip strength and gives me wobbly legs, what comes to your minds as a way to help me land more muskies? Love you guys like you're the friends I've never met, and I'm a fly on the wall for some hilarious conversations. Larry, that is awesome. What a motivating thing there. He ain't gonna let anything hold him back. That's what musky fishing is all about. That means the world to us. I have actually fished with a few anglers that have had varying degrees of things going on, right? From literally physically degenerative diseases, tremors, people people coming on the boat, Jay, that have had a hip replaced or a knee replaced or
sure,
a litany of things, right? Some kind of physical deformity, whatever. I mean, people are people. It happens. And as we all get older, guess what? Unfortunately, heck, it could be me. That runs in the family. We all encounter this. Yeah, and I've seen it. And so a couple ways that I've figured out to help these people catch fish. First and foremost, if you have wobbly legs, you have a balance issue, is obviously set down, right? Now, this is not for you guys that are fishing muskies and are spry and young, but what I'm going to recommend is you get a full butt seat or the full seat, like a captain's chair, right? Without armrests on it. And you put that thing on the deck of the boat like your freaking Bill Dance, right? So, and you go, what do you mean? This is a combination thing I've done. It's not something I'm doing once a week or once a year, but it's something I've made happen. Full seat, setting down, the longest rod we can get. I'm going to put you on a 9'6" Musky Shop shield rod. I'm going to put your butt in a seat, right? And that's going to allow you to do some kind of J or some kind of turn their boat side, right? Now, hopefully, it's not an issue. If I can't stand up, which means I can't see follows, the smartest thing to be would have a small panoptics unit right there so you can see behind your, see if a fish is coming, so you're not standing up. you know, because I've seen guys like I can't stand for very long and they're just gassing themselves all day long, Jay. Like they're trying to stand up and trying to figure eight. You're worried about them going out of the boat. Just put your butt in the seat, sit down, relax. You're going to miss figure eight fish, some of them. You're not going to catch all this and all that. Focus on really good retrieves and focus on really good mid-triggering spots, right? You know, just go figure eights are not for me in most circumstances. Fine. You know, that's part of your game. Figure out some really awesome ways to get fish to eat off the boat where speed burst, try to add some kind of directional change, upward rip, downward rip, whatever. And if you got that long rod, that's going to allow you to do that lazy J or something boat side to jam it down there, at least get a turn in a setting position. Obviously, smaller baits. You know, I've fished with anglers where, hey, I've been for 3 weeks, Jay, I've been on like a pounder bite, right? Well, now this person has a you know, condition that's not going to allow for that. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to fish downsized stuff. We're going to have to make what we can throw work, you know, and it's not, you're just going to forgo stuff. I'm just being flatly honest with you. But do what you can do. Don't try to, you know, spend more time on the water and try to be as smart as effective. The other thing I'd say is this, is get really good at fishing things thoroughly, right? So you're not going to be able to power fish as much. I mean, just is what it is. You're not going to rip pounders all day long. So let's take a standard shallow dog and get real good at working it super slow, right? Let it sink down. Let it count down. These are the things when I've talked to people in person, we've discussed on the boat. You know, you got to outthink him instead of power fish. So, you know, what's going to be your game plan? You mentally know that muskies are at X, Y, and Z. What do I need to do to get a bait down there that can work effectively? That would be my take there. The other thing is this, glide baits. There's a lot of great glide baits that work with simple reel turns, right? So focus on baits that are just turn the handle, stop, turn the handle, stop, turn the handle, stop.
Sure.
The other comment I make is this. Is I've seen this work wonders for a few different people that have grip strength issue is the jig ripper, right? Just because the way it orientates your hand a little bit, right? And if you think about it, if a muskie's going to grab that, he's pulling forward and you've got a far larger surface area in your hand, right? So you, if you conceptualize that, if you're like pulling someone's arm forward, that you sort of got this pull back, you get this grip, obviously. That would be my commentary there. The other thing I've done with people that are having physical issues is always fishing a high speed reel. Right? Breaks a lot of rules here from what you've heard. But if you, let's say, and Jay, there's a lot of us, man, we got old dads, you know? You hit a certain age, man, you look at your parents and you go, hell, my dad's dead. You know, you look at like, don't get much older than that. You know, you just see them diminish and go, how do we still participate together on the boat? How do we keep these people in the game? So put their butts in a seat, long rod for a lazy J beside the boat, high speed reel. And the reason the high speed reel is they're having to turn the handle less, right? Straight retrieve baits, glide baits that you have to just turn the handle, turn like a warlock, right? Turn a little bit, left, turn, right, turn, left, you know, bait like a titan, dive rise with reel turns, spinner baits like we were talking about earlier. Just be smart about sort of your game plan to facilitate that. Those would be my thoughts. Jay, anything come to mind as far as, because I know you've helped a lot of people with rods and reels over the year and equipment.
Yeah.
Anything that comes to mind of like sort of how to help somebody that's in just a different physical state?
Lure choices that cast like bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know what I mean? Certain bucktails would not be a good choice. The 1 ounce bucktails, the 1 1/4 ounce bucktails, they don't cast far. Mm-hmm. You got any kind of wind issue, last thing you want is not to have, they got a 9/6 rod. All they got to do is just flick that thing, just sweep it out. Yeah. Rod's doing all the work. If it's a glide bait, like you mentioned, glide baits, cast like a bullet. Mm-hmm. They're fairly heavy, but they're not, they're not soft plastic heavy.
Right.
They're just in that power zone where you're going to get great distance. You can cast it as far as you want, and let the reel handle do the work. That would be a simple and effective way to get somebody with any kind of issues like you were talking about on the boat to really be in the strike zone and fish very effectively.
Absolutely.
Really easy too. Yeah, it's real easy to do.
I think just think smart. We always want to fish hard, but we catch more fish by thinking. You know, the smarter you are, the smarter you apply things, it's going to get you where you want to be. Anyway, Jay, I know you've got to go around the neighborhood and look for lost eggs.
Well, they're buried in the snow, but yeah, I'm going to do that later.
He's rooting around the neighbor's house. Did they miss any eggs?
Yeah, we'll check it out in May.
Check it out in May. All right. Say good morning, Jay.
Good morning, guys. Thank you.
But if you don't own a Titan,